We are going to start with a public hearing and at some point work session today on 2628. Then we will do 2760, 3303, and 2114 in that order. With that, Representative Greenlake and Mike Greenade, why don't you come up? I'll open up a public hearing on 2628A.
Sue? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2628A declares legislative findings regarding outdoor lighting fixtures and their impact on light pollution, recommends that local building officials assess local ordinances related to outdoor lighting, and that the State Department of Energy assess state statutes and state building codes related to outdoor lighting fixtures, requires the department to review model ordinance provisions relevant to outdoor lighting fixtures, to publish a report containing findings and recommendations, and to report to the governor and the 74th Legislative Assembly by October 1st, 2008. It sunsets January 2nd, 2012.
Thanks for being here, Representative.
Thank you very much. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33. Happy to be before my senator here, my physician, my friends. We hear a lot about the urban-rural divide in this building, and this is a bill that my colleagues from rural areas don't understand at all because it doesn't make any sense to them. But this is one place where being on the urban side of the urban-rural divide is a significant disadvantage. I was at the beach one day and looked up and saw stars. I mean, lots and lots of stars. I saw the Milky Way. I just saw this night sky. It was the moon hadn't risen yet. And it was just blanketed with stars. You could almost read from the light of the stars. And
Representative, this is beautiful, but we can't hear you very well. Linda, would you mind closing the door? I want to make sure we can hear what you're saying.
I can talk closer to
the mic.
That's
good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And it just took me back to my boyhood days where I grew up even in a city, and I grew up being able to see stars. And it struck me how it's like to live in a city and to have a whole generation of people basically on a nice, clear night that isn't too moonlit, you can pick up six or seven celestial bodies in the sky, and that's about it. The rest is just blacked out by the light of the city. And I was my feeling was reinforced when I went by my daughter's house one time in northeast Portland and saw this church parking lot. And the church parking lot was lit by just a dozen omnidirectional, very bright lights. And when I went home to my house, I live at 1,100 feet and I overlooked that part of the city, I could see the parking lot lights from 5 miles away, 5 air miles away in my house. And it really struck me that it got me interested in this question of light pollution and the effect of light pollution on our environment. Now, what I've learned, and perhaps Mr. Rainey can talk a little more about it, what I've learned is the problem of inefficiently using energy is really strong in this. If you have a parking lot and you need to get it lighted for the safety of the people, you need to have a certain amount of light on the ground. And if you can do two things, if you can, first of all, create that light going in a unidirectional way, so the light goes from the fixture down to the ground, rather than in an omnidirectional way, which is much more common, which the light goes in every direction, and if you can get the correct amount of light to the ground, because if you get any light beyond what you need on the ground to light it properly, the light bounces up into the sky as well. Using omnidirectional versus unidirectional and over-lighting is extremely inefficient from an energy perspective. And more communities are beginning to find that out. There are several communities in Oregon now that have dark sky bills, and they find very significant savings in energy if they can create the model that properly lights the ground. It turns out as I got more and more into this question, and I had a proposal in the 2005 session to get the Department of Transportation to use more energy-efficient lighting on the highways. Turns out they've already solved the problem and are planning for the future to use what's known as Cobra head lighting. Lights that send the light down and monitoring the amount of lighting in their rest stops and the parking lots to make sure they're safe. They already solved the problem. I then found out that there's something called the International Dark Sky Association, and there's the Illuminating Engineering Society of North America, are busy working on a model outdoor lighting ordinance that would create sensible limitations on the scope of lighting we use as a part of our buildings, parking lots, a variety of illumination options. And what we propose in House Bill 2628 is that the Department of Energy, which turns out to be very interested in this issue anyway, you're here in a moment, simply take notice of the model ordinance when it comes out, and it's expected out in the next couple of months, or the next 3 or 4 months at the latest, and then require DOE to conduct a study of the ordinance upon its release and to make recommendations about its use in Oregon. This is a bill that would be, I mean, it's a very sensible model. It says, let's look at what's being created now and see how it applies to Oregon. And with that, I'll turn you over to Mr. Graney, who was kind enough to come today.
Welcome, Mr. Graney. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For record, Mike Graney from Department of Energy. Department also supports the bill, House Bill 2628. We think this is an important issue, and national standards or national model standards that are developed by organizations like this are things that we use to evaluate in the normal course of making recommendations to the Building Code Agency to update the state energy building code. So we think this makes sense to specifically focus on this issue. There are significant energy savings issues involved, as Representative Greenwood mentioned, and this is something that we can do within our existing workload and budget. This would not have an adverse budget impact on us.
Very good. Committee questions? Senator Bates.
Just a quick question. Representative Greenlee, you may not know the answer to this, kid, but you know a lot of the lighting we see out there is on a large pole up in the air and fairly expensive. Can they retrofit those, do you think, just by putting a different type of Cobra lighting over it and a different type of bulb? Could they have to pull the whole thing down, or could they just do a retrofit?
My guess is that you probably have to replace the fixture eventually. Mm-hmm. And the time to do it is when fixtures need to be replaced. So I think it's not a matter of just putting a bulb on it, those big high things way up in the sky. But if you look at some of the rest stops now, you'll see how they've been retrofitted for Cobra. Incidentally, the bill excludes like football games, things like that are going on during the day. It's basically for the kind of permanent lighting situations.
All right, with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2628 and open the work session on 2628. If I could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2628, A and Gross, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Bates, moving 2628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Vote no.
Thank you for that, Senator Beyer. Any objections? Senator Byers is noted. So ordered. And the chair will carry this one. Thank you, Representative Greenlee. With that, I'll close the work session on 2628 and open a public hearing on 2760. While Representatives Clem and Edwards make their way to the table, Sue, would you fill us in?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2760A modifies requirements and procedures for city to annex territory that is surrounded by a city. It adds a definition of creek and river, includes Interstate Highway 5 as part of city boundary allowable for consideration of island annexation, allows no more than 25% of the perimeter of a city boundary that consists of a public right-of-way only to be considered for purposes of island annexation, requires that annexation take effect 3 to 10 years after it is proclaimed unless the property is sold, in which case annexation takes effect immediately upon property transfer. It specifies deadlines for city recorder to notify county clerk of approved delayed annexation, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
All right. Representatives, welcome. Whichever one of you wants to start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Chris Edwards, state representative from West Eugene, Santa Clara, Junction City, Cheshire, and Alvador. That's House District 14. And the issue before you today, this issue of annexation, embodies quite a bit of complexity, and there are a lot of different ways that annexations can happen. And this bill deals with only island annexations. It doesn't deal with all the planned annexations under different statutes, different sections of law. This only deals with island annexations. And this this bill came out of the House 55-3, and it is the result of a work group that was commissioned by the committee chair in the Ag and Natural Resources Committee in the House. As a part of that work group was myself, Representative Clem. It was chaired by Representative Boquist, and also present were the League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, Washington County, Oregon Communities for Voice in Annexation, the City of Portland, the City of Eugene, a city councilor from Tigard, Nike, and the League of Women Voters. None of these parties, to my knowledge, have expressed opposition to this bill. Now, to explain what the bill does, I'll first give you a little bit of background information about a little bit of background knowledge about island annexation. According to Oregon law, cities may annex unincorporated property that is completely surrounded by city. This is commonly referred to as island annexation. Under this section of law, the city may annex the island of unincorporated property at their will without any notice, public hearing, or vote of the people. There are many different methods for annexing property under Oregon law. Island annexation is just one of some 13 tools for use by cities. This bill is before you today because some cities have a history of subverting democratic processes in order to annex unincorporated land. Perhaps the most egregious form of this type of annexation without representative vote has been the practice of encircling entire neighborhoods by annexing streets and roads. While technically allowed under the law, the resulting quote-unquote islands are hardly the result of vast areas of contiguous city property that surround little holdout parcels. Too often the opposite is true. The islands are vast areas of unincorporated property that are surrounded by little more than city roads, which the city has annexed legally under Oregon law. As I explained previously, once encircled, that unincorporated island may be annexed at the will of the city. No notice, no hearing, no vote. So House Bill 2760 does two things. Three things, excuse me. First, it limits the use of public rights of way, such as streets and roads, and the formation of islands. Under House Bill 2760A, no more than 25% of the boundary of an island may be comprised solely of public rights of way. Secondly, it requires cities to post public notice and conduct a prior hearing before annexing a bona fide island. And finally, the bill specifies a minimum 3-year deferment of annexation once a city makes a legitimate annexation using the island annexation statute. This bill will give the property owner time to make plans for their property upon the annexation taking place. This topic is complex, but the solution is relatively straightforward, something I think that we could use a bit more of, and I urge your support. And I'd be happy to answer any questions after the rest of the panel.
Then why don't we go to Representative Clem and then to Senator Walker?
Sure. Okay. didn't mind. I know your time is valuable. You're committee chair. Thank you. I'm Brian.
It's her birthday, too.
Is that right? Oh, happy birthday.
It's been an up and down sort of day.
Brian Clem, state representative for House District 21. And I've got basically City of Salem and then a lot of Marion County residents who live in unincorporated Marion County, just on the other side of Lancaster between Cordon Road. And what I learned when I was meeting with a lot of these county residents, roughly like 10,000, I went and at least went to their doors, they universally have concerns about the way annexation occur. A lot of them even can live with the idea that they may be annexed at some point. That's sort of the City of Salem's stated objective, is to annex everything within the urban growth boundary. But the process by which it occurs is what can often give rise to a lot of frustration. So this bill and 3303, the other bill that deals with the ability for those folks to vote, which we'll hear in a minute, those are the results, the reason I signed on to them were the results of these conversations. Salem has not typically used roads to annex. I know that has been a phenomenon in other areas, and I can see from just listening to my constituents talk about the methods of cities, why if it were happening in an area where an entire island was created through roads, they would get upset. They would feel like that was an artificial creation and not something that naturally occurred. The island annexation statute was originally made to deal with naturally occurring islands that through planned growth, every now and then a little piece would get left out, and then so how do you deal with that little piece? It wasn't to intentionally create islands. So the limitation on roads in this bill is a way to get at that. Just shrink the amount of allowable portions of an island that can be done by roads. The public notices, obviously a big principle of government, if your property is going to be changed or dealt with in some way, there'd at least be a public notice and a hearing so you could come speak to it. And the taxes is actually the biggest one for me personally that affects Salem, because what happens typically is we'll have a series of annexation issues on our ballot, sometimes as many as 30, and like 25 or 26 of them will be non-controversial. The owner wanted to be annexed, they asked for it, our charter requires that's voted on anyway, so that goes on. And then there'll be like two or three that are island annexations where the people really don't want to be. They don't get to vote in that election either. And then if it's held in September, their taxes go up usually around 40% in Salem. It can be as high as 70% in others, and pretty quickly. So this is saying, okay, the annexation happened, but we're going to have it take effect in 3 years. So then they can move, or they can plan for the new increased property taxes, or they can have some adjustment to the fact that they're now going to be bound by the city, rather than in a month, all of a sudden, welcome to the city, here's your new tax bill, welcome to the neighborhood. And they don't like that so much. So again, this was a consensus sort of compromise approach. You know, the desires in the original bills that a lot of the representatives at least signed on to were far more aggressive than this. They were no roads, mandatory 10-year phase-in. Everybody gave in order to get a bill that we could get 55 votes for out of the House and deliver you something relatively non-controversial. So I would be happy to answer questions, but those are the basic issues involved from my perspective.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and this is the first time I've appeared before you where your room is not overflowing with people. So that tells me, A, people are not interested, or B, they've done such a good job of putting this package together that everyone is happy. I think it's the latter. I'm very pleased with the work the House has done on this bill. Representative Edwards is my House I say housemate, and that sort of says things that people might read into the record differently, but he is in my part of
it. It's been an up and down day.
Part of my Senate district. And when
you have another housemate, too, there's actually
Yes. Well, I'll find another word. When he and I were out on the campaign trail.
This is kind of spicy.
Yeah.
You came in the right time, Jason.
I sure did. When we were out on the campaign trail together, we share, of course, half of the district, and that half of the district was pretty upset about annexation. We made it a commitment to our citizens to represent them in Salem as they wished, and my part was to shepherd Senate Bill 417 through the Senate, which passed passed the House. Once it got there, Representative Edwards took over, and I believe the governor will sign that. That rids the county of the Boundary Commission. This is the other piece to that, not necessarily Boundary Commission, but the other piece to the issue that citizens were concerned about. It did not escape my attention. It took them 13 amendments to get there. We've all had bills this session that have that many amendments. I think, Mr. Chair, maybe yours is 838 has more than that.
Not by many.
So I know I personally have Senate Bill 737. We are on the dash 13, but there will be no more. So they've done a good job, and it is a complex issue. The cities have to be commended. Linda Ludwig did a tremendous job in the interim on addressing these issues and getting the work group together. And these folks have really carried the banner, and I'm just here to say this is a good bill, should pass.
Committee, any questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Boquist should be here to answer this question, but under your definition of creek, I understand everything along there except for when you say, but it is not shallow. So how are you going to determine, who is going to determine whether or not this creek is shallow and when shallow becomes deep?
Well, boys, I can't answer that question because you were in your work group.
The courts will say that one.
The intention of defining creek for the purposes of this bill were so that creeks that are not that run through a neighborhood and maybe crossed by 20 streets. You know, they clearly are not big landmarks. And they are not, you know, the Willamette River, which borders my district on one side, is much more of a landmark than Spring Creek, which runs through my district, that's culverted and crossed by probably 20 different streets. So the intention of defining this is really to be able to define those instances would not be able to be used as well. I don't know. I mean, to be honest, how do you define shallow or intermittent? I would imagine that there are other areas of case law that this committee is probably much more used to dealing with than myself, this committee, or Ag and Natural Resources over in the House.
Well, I understand intermittent. Intermittent means it flows at some point in time, and another point in time it doesn't. But when you say it's not shallow, to me, I don't know what you're talking about. Unless you're talking about, you know, somebody's personality or something.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, maybe it means it doesn't flow over your ankle. I mean, shallow is pretty shallow. I mean, I think you know it when you see it, but you're right.
Where there should be the notch should be taken out.
Senator Byers, may I ask a question?
You think the not potentially is a mistake? Should be is shallow or intermittent?
Well,
it seems contradictory. I think it was
they seem inconsistent.
Is that Scribner's error?
I'm trying to work it. Means a person that is smaller than.
We should have LC look at this real quick.
You're going to have the League of Oregon Cities, too, and I know that it's possible that they...
Does anybody in the room know which LC, which attorney drafted this?
It should be on the...
Harrison.
Harrison.
Harrison Conley.
Brian, would you call down to LC and have Harrison Conley come on up?
If you don't need me anymore, I need to get back to
Thank
committee.
You, Senator.
Thank you.
Good Senator Bates, go right ahead.
Thank you while we're waiting. Representative Edwards?
I don't think that's...
I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but one of the problems we've had with this type of situation is a little different than what you're describing here, but this maybe would help resolve it also. We've had situations where a city will annex a road out of the county and then encircle a piece of land, come right back in again, and ignore places in between that would cost them more revenue as far as, not, it wouldn't cost them more cost, there'd be more cost involved than revenue, bringing services to those people. But the piece of land they've encircled out along this road, what they've encircled, would bring them in substantial revenue. industrial park or a big headquarters. Beaverton's been kind of noted for doing this, and it's a real problem sometimes. Does this bill cover that kind of instance?
What this bill would cover is, this bill doesn't prevent the annexation of that street or road. This bill prevents counting that street or road, or it prevents an island that could be formed through the annexation of that street or road from being comprised of more than 25% of solely streets and roads. So it's conceivable that you could still have an island that could be annexed that had 10% of its length, of the boundary of the island, was streets or roads, and that could still be annexed under island annexation statutes if this bill were to go forward. And you can argue philosophically whether you agree with that or not. This is essentially a compromise position in all the wrestling over where do you draw the line. And I don't know if that really answers your question, but that I'm trying to explain better what it is that this bill.
I think Representative Clem is going to jump in and help you out here.
Yeah, let me just take a stab. It definitely, and I think Nike is going to testify to how it would have affected their particular situation, which you all dealt with last time, but it will definitely help. And the answer is, because naturally occurring islands, most people don't have a problem with that. It's when they're artificially created. And so what we're trying to get at is leave an amount of road that is potentially incidental to it. That's fine, but don't create, 100% of an island using a road. If there's 25%, we can live with that. And if it's naturally occurring, obviously we've got some provisions to deal with that on the taxes.
Right. Ms. Ludwig, thanks for joining us. You thought you might have an answer to your question, and then Mr. Connolly may not even need to come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. In response to Representative Byers' question, yes, you are correct. This really was a question for Legislative Council and Representative Boquist, who actually drafted this portion. The intent by saying not shallow or intermittent was to get at not being able to use irrigation ditches as a portion of the boundary of an island or a wetland. That's as much as I know about those two words. Thank you very much.
Actually, that's helpful. It doesn't define the word shallow very much. Mr. Connolly, you want to take a shot at defining the word shallow for us? Or
I see a Webster dictionary.
Ms. Ludwig, thank you for that. That was helpful.
Good afternoon, folks. Harrison Connolly, Deputy Legislative Counsel, Chair of Aukian Committee members. No, I really don't want to try to define the term shallow. We struggled with a number of the concepts in this draft. Obviously, at some level, when we don't define a term, we look to Webster's dictionary for the definition of the meaning. But our purpose in drafting, and probably it's a really good thing for us to have this discussion and put this legislative history in the record, because it's just a fact. Some of this terminology is ambiguous, and I don't know that there is any resort for a court other than to listen to us say, what were we intending to do? And so obviously intermittent is a creek or a water. I mean, what is the difference between a river and a creek? A stream. I'm not sure where you draw those fine distinctions, but obviously intermittent is something that is not year round. Shallow, as clearly we were talking about, as Linda suggested, we had in mind not man-made kinds of bodies of water that are not the natural course of some waterway. Other than that, I really, I don't know that I can add a lot about what shallow means, where we draw the line with what is shallow.
All right. I hate to do this to you, but committee, are there any questions?
Or are we up a creek?
Why wouldn't we use the word seasonal instead of intermittent?
S-
seasonal might, Chair Avakian, Senator Atkinson, seasonal might be a fine word. I guess at this point I'd like to look at what the dictionary says about seasonal.
Well, I'm guessing what you're getting with the word intermittent is a break in the flow of the water at some places, regardless of what time of year it is. Am I right about that?
Chair Avakian, yes, maybe that is a good reason to stay with the word intermittent as opposed to seasonal, because that implies a certain time of year.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I mean, I guess, you know, from what I'm hearing is, and I can agree you don't want to include a wetland, but you already said it's a natural course of water, so that would naturally, that in itself would get rid of an irrigation ditch. And, maybe you should put not a wetland if you mean, or maybe you should put a natural course of flowing water or something like that if you're trying to eliminate just a spot where water may be puddled up. But I just,
you know, let me add a comment to that, to where we're going with this here, as long as the committee is comfortable with it. This particular provision, as well as the rest in 2760, we have been trying to sort out for three sessions in a row now and have had great difficulty in getting to these kinds of definitions. And I think we're as close as we've ever been, even though I think we could continue to wordsmith it. Senator Beyer, Senator Atkinson, Senator Bates all bring up good points. It's going to be my desire to just finally pass this thing out. And if we struggle with definitions as it's applied, then we'll come back to it and fix it. Mr. Connolly, thank you very much. You are excused. The two of you, Ms. Representative Edwards, are you done?
I'm done.
Representative Clem, can you hang around for a minute since you wanted to testify in 3303?
Yep.
All right. I'll tell you what then. Why don't we bring up Jerry Ritter, Julia Brim Edwards. Ms. Ludwick, I'm going to bring you back up when we do the next bill. And you can comment on both if you want. Okay, Ms. Brim-Edwards, go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Julia Brim-Edwards, Nike State and Public Affairs Director. I want to thank the committee and the chair for holding a hearing on this bill, on House Bill 2760, as it provides meaningful reform to the island annexation statutes. Nike believes this bill restores fairness between cities and property owners, provides businesses with certainty, and adds a measure of fairness to the island annexation statutes. Those of you who were here last session know that Senate Bill 887 created an interim work group, and street annexations and island annexations rose to the surface as an area in need of change and reform. As indicated by Representative Edwards, there was a work group on the House side, and to work through the many bills and where there might be consensus and agreement on some changes, Nike participated in that work group, and we believe that this is a well-crafted bill, not that it's a nice day outside. That's why your room's not packed today. For our neighbors and fellow businesses in unincorporated Washington County, the street annexation changes, that 25% increment, we believe are meaningful reforms and level the playing field on issues related to street annexations. And although Senator Bates is not here anymore, I guess for the record, since he raised the issue about the cherry stems and the issue of high-value properties, I would submit that this is one of the reasons why street annexations did rise to the surface as an issue, and that the city of Beaverton had looked at unincorporated Washington County and had a number of different schemes and sort of plans in various states that encircled what would be considered high-value property, low-service needs, and those are the ones that have been targeted in their annexation efforts prior to the last session. And In terms of whether this bill addresses that particular issue, I think it does. The 25%, we kind of went through what's the exact number that would be the appropriate number, and I think it's the number. There were some valid issues the city raised why it shouldn't be zero, and some, I think, legitimate issues of why it shouldn't, streets shouldn't be 100% of a perimeter. So from the standpoint of the work group members, that seemed like a reasonable number that we agreed to. The final point I think I would want to make is that in terms of Washington County and whether this change is necessary, I think it's important to note that Beaverton has not withdrawn its aggressive annexation policy, and the moratorium that the legislature implemented last legislative session is about to expire, and that this will provide, I think, in Washington County and other parts of the state, a return to some semblance of balance between property owners and cities. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ritter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jerry Ritter representing Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations. Nice day outside. Senators, we would ask that you move 2760A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'd like to expand a little bit on the history of how we got to where we are today. This process began in the interim session when Representative Girard asked Representative Ackerman to draft an island annexation reform measure. And this was prompted really by three different developments, primarily. Number one, as you've heard, certain cities had been aggressively annexing public rights of way for the sole purpose of creating islands. Also, the Senate Bill 887 work group had agreed that cities should not be doing that, but had not drafted any specific legislation to address it, and there really was no statutory guidance on street annexation. And also, as those of you who were here last term know, the 2005 legislature took a very strong stance against forced annexation. We still thank you for that. We were asked to assist Representative Ackerman in developing the language, and the result of that effort was draft legislation, LC 1245, that was accepted by Representative Girard's committee for introduction as a committee measure. It was introduced as House Bill 2050. And then later, Representative Edwards and you, Mr. Chair, and other sponsors introduced House Bill 2760, which is very similar to 2050. But 2050 originally included no streets for island boundaries. It also included a tax phase-in provision. And it became pretty clear that there was going to be serious opposition from the public constituents on the use of 0% for streets. And then there were some constitutional issues with the tax phase-in language. So Representative Roblin, in whose committee annexation issues were being dealt with, commissioned a second work group. It was a very diverse group, OCVA, League of Oregon Cities, Friends of Bull Mountain, legislatures, a number of other public and private interests, who got together, met four times under the leadership of Representative Boquist, and had subsequent discussions by phone and email for several weeks after that. By the time we got done, we had the Dash 13 version of the bill, which is before you today. It sailed through the House, as you know, with only three opposing votes. So in summary, the legislation before you today was the result of a great deal of work by many interested parties who came together to craft meaningful and reasonable island annexation reform. Now, as with any such effort, not everybody got everything they wanted. But it's a reasonable compromise that is really, in our view, a significant improvement over the existing statute. In conclusion, I want to thank and recognize the annexation work group membership, Representative Roblin and his committee members and staff for providing the time and the resources to get this mission done, and, of course, all the sponsors of House Bill 2760. Please send this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And thank you very much. I'll be happy to address any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you both very much. Martha Pellegrino and Bob Clay. After that, Representative, I'll bring you and Linda Ludwig back up to testify on the other bill.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino with the City of Portland, and with me is Bob Clay, supervising planner with the city. Along with many of other folks in this room, I participated in the annexation work group this session, chaired by Representative Boquist, and certainly appreciated the opportunity to participate and believe that we had many productive discussions during the short time that we met. Despite the valiant efforts by Representative Boquist to chair this group, though, we did not reach a consensus by the end of our four meetings. I did, though, learn a great deal during those meetings and am certainly sympathetic to many of the perspectives that were raised. I will say, though, in this circumstance, Portland is actually not the city that caused great consternation, but we certainly will be a city that will feel a number of unintended consequences. And so what I wanted to just take a few minutes and Bob will walk through are some of the examples whereby a city that has had a very unaggressive annexation policy, along with a number of other cities in the state, will be adversely impacted by this legislation. Essentially, what we will do is cement a permanent system of tax inequity that will benefit, at least in Portland, some very well-to-do residents at the expense of lower-income folks. And I get my request would be that I think that there probably could be a fairly easy fix to this, and just would hope that we could have an opportunity to do that potentially by Thursday. So I'd like to just turn things over to Bob, who can walk you through just a short history.
Thank you, Martha. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Clay with the City of Portland Planning Bureau, Chief Planner. Just very briefly, the city's involvement with annexation began in 1983 with something called Resolution A, which was an agreement, intergovernmental agreement, between the city and the county. The county was facing severe budget shortfalls and problems with its bonding, and as a result of that, decided to forego any future opportunities with respect to the delivery of urban services in Multnomah County, and instead decided to let both Gresham and Portland jointly annex lands within Mid-Multnomah County. At the same time, there was a DEQ mandate with respect to tens of miles of Mid-Multnomah County because of groundwater pollution, and the DEQ mandate at that time required that the area be sewered. Multnomah County didn't have the bonding capacity to be able to do that, so the city got into the fairly assertive annexation program together with the city of Gresham. We went through that all through the mid-late 90s or late 80s and early 90s, and also looked at northwest and southwest Portland, and we ended an annexation program in 1996. So for better than a decade, the city's program for annexation has been a property owner consent initiated process. However, at the close of almost two decades of annexation program, we found ourselves with about a dozen areas of the city that are inside of our urban service boundary. We have one situation where we have an island annexed, an island today. We have several others that are enclaves and nearly become islands, and a number of kind of strange situations, if you will, where we actually annexed public rights of way to the interior of an enclave or an island. And so we wanted to take another look at the definition of perimeter of the territory. There's language in the bill that talks about perimeter of the territory, and we think we understand what the intent of that language was. We would like to more carefully define what is meant by that, because we have situations where we have annexed property to the interior of an enclave, and if you were to go by a very strict interpretation of what is meant by perimeter of the territory for the purposes of defining an island, we think you would go way up inside and around that annexed public right-of-way and then come back out around the exterior of the island, and that would then create a situation where we would have more than 25% of the area to be islanded. Sorry for the going down into the trees on this, but that's where we sort of find ourselves, is looking at very specific situations going, we don't think that's what was meant. We'd like an opportunity to define the perimeter of the territory. Thank you.
Questions, committee? All right, seeing none, thank you both very much. Representative Clem and Linda Ludwig, why don't you both come back up? I'm going to simultaneously open a public hearing, House Bill 3303A, the other annexation bill. Have you both testify on that? And Sue, why don't you give us some summary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3303A requires a city with a charter requiring annexation elections to allow electors in an island territory to be annexed to vote on annexation. Requires a majority of vote cast in the city and the territory combined to approve annexation. Requires that a proclamation of annexation contain a legal description of each territory annexed.
And since we're open for testimony under both bills, if you want to clean up anything from the last one or comment, go ahead.
Sure, I'll begin. Brian Clem again, State Representative for House District 21. This is only applicable to cities where they have elections on all the annexations. Not all cities do. I think only about 30 do. Salem does. We vote on every single annexation, consent or not. And what's awkward is when you're talking to somebody whose house is being up for annexation and they don't get to vote. So the city's going to vote on their property, and whether they come into the city or not, they don't get to vote at all. And yet, again, the effects can be something like a 40% increase in their property taxes. So I talked to my city about how could we remedy this, and they said, really, it's really in state law. If you want them to be allowed to vote, you're going to have to change the state law. We can't really grant or confer that opportunity onto people as a city council because they don't live within the city. So that was like the first bill I dropped when I got here, was let's let them vote in the election, and if they lose, you know, they lose. But at least they'll get to vote in the election when everybody else is voting on their house. Now, the larger issue is that this only applies to cities who have elections, so we're not taking cities who currently have their city councils do this, it's just a matter of city council business, and encumbering new elections on cities all over the state that don't currently have them. We're trying to get into a situation where if the cities are going to have an election anyway, let's let the people whose home it is vote in that election as well.
Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. Speaking to House Bill 3303, Representative Clem is absolutely correct. The reason we haven't seen this in the past is as charter authority for municipalities only grants them authority inside their city limits. They can't compel an election outside of the city. So they could not allow in the past, without the passage of this bill, folks that are in those islands outside of city limits to be able to vote on that. This bill would remedy that. I will take advantage of the opportunity you've offered, Mr. Chair, and put a couple of things in the record about 2760. I want to be absolutely clear with you. There was a work group on this effort. However, the product you see in this bill was not really representative of the discussions of the work group. It was representative of the interests of the House representatives that worked on the work group. And there were other issues that came up, very compelling issues and thoughts of solutions about more citizen involvement, about the provision of services, and funding those, and the linkages with annexation to how we fund those services. Also, the lack of integration with annexation and our 20-year land supply requirements. We didn't see those portions of that go into this bill. There also was no opportunity for the work group members to put anything on the record as far as what you see in the bill here. So that's why you see the city of Portland before you today, and you would likely have seen several other cities with concerns about the bill. From our perspective, the most concerning portion of the bill that we don't really know how will play out is the three-year effective date, delayed effective date in the bill. Typically, that's usually utilized by a city as an incentive for new build-out and new construction areas. We don't really know how that's going to affect areas that are currently built out, and when a city wants to put in new services, if they have to delay effective date. The city of Newburgh, for example, was looking at utilizing island methodology for an annexation and need to provide water services. They were going to move forward with an urban renewal district in that new area. With the delayed effective date, they will not be able to do that. So we do have some concerns about how that will play out. Also, I just want to clarify something in the record. Most of the cities in the state don't encircle islands for the purposes of annexation with right-of-way or roads. We do know examples where that has occurred, but I just want to put in the record the majority of cities in the state do not utilize that practice. However, if this bill does pass out of your committee, we're hoping that it'll put those concerns to rest. And so... With that, I think I will just ask if you have any questions.
Committee? All right. Thank you both very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3303A and the public hearing on House Bill 2760A. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3303A. If I could have a motion on that one.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 3303A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Moving 3303A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Beyer, I see you as a sponsor on the bill. Would you carry that one?
Sure.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2760A as well, and if I could have a motion on that one.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2760A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, for moving 2760A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Let's hope they can figure out what shallow, intermittent, and seasonal means.
Well, and along those lines, I suppose I'll comment, too, see if it spurs anything from the committee. I think the city of Portland raises some very legitimate issues with regard to, I guess we can call them unintended consequences. I think Ms. Ludwig also stated that this poses potential unintended consequences for other cities as well. I don't know that we know what all of them are. I guess what I do know is somebody who's sponsoring the bill and has sponsored similar bills the last two sessions, this is a very, very tricky thing to do in managing annexation policy. And the one thing that I guess the one conclusion I do come to is that there are cities out there now that are using roadways in order to annex islands, intentionally or not, which deprives the people within those islands of a voice. And I don't know that this is a perfect bill, but I think it's a bill that is a start in addressing some type of a balance in the inequity. And this chair, at least, would be very open to looking at the issue again if unintended consequences pose problems for cities. But I've certainly come to the conclusion that we need to do something. We need to act. And if it doesn't work, we'll sort that out as we go. Is there any other discussion from the committee? All right. Seeing none, then any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senator Walker will carry the bill on the floor. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2760A. Representative Clem, thank you for your work on this and for sticking around so long. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2114A. If Lanny Quackenbush from the Department of Forestry could come up. Sue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2114A creates a stewardship agreement grant fund, continuously appropriates money to the State Board of Forestry to provide grants to carry out the purposes of stewardship agreements, permits flexible incentive account to be used to fund activities related to stewardship agreements, permits the Department of Agriculture and the State Board of Forestry to make binding determination as to the applicability of rules to particular landowners as part of a stewardship agreement. It permits the Department of Agriculture and Forestry to determine consistency of activities under under stewardship agreements with the Federal Endangered Species Act and exempts land management plans of stewardship agreements from disclosure as public record unless public interest requires disclosure of a particular instance. For the record, we have a letter from the Defenders of Wildlife in support of the measure, and particularly a proposed dash A2 amendment.
Welcome, Mr. Quackenbush. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Avakian and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lanny Quackenbush with the Oregon Department of Forestry, and I'm here to speak in support of this bill and to just touch briefly on the key measures within the bill and why we are proposing this bill. Two sessions ago, the legislature removed a stewardship agreement authority from the Forest Practice Act and recreated it as a separate and distinct authority, and directed the Department of Ag and the Department of Forestry to co-adopt rules and to make the stewardship agreement concept apply to both ag and forest land. We engaged in that process over the intervening years and completed administrative rule adoption last fall. And in that process, we identified some weaknesses or some things that we wished had been put into the original legislation. Part of that was at the advice of our attorneys, who said that because the original stewardship authorization didn't specifically delineate certain incentives, that we could not do those by administrative rule, that we needed to come back and ask that the legislature specifically endorse those concepts. House Bill 2114A does that. We are asking that this bill define methods to provide financial support to landowners, even though we are not at this time asking that those specific authorities be funded. We essentially want the authority so that as we see a federal farm bill and other legislation unfolding, we have the opportunity to suggest state-level funding in the future. We have defined regulatory certainty. The original statute said this was a potential benefit without defining it, and we have sought to define it at both the state and the federal level. And there was a specific authority that was deleted from the Forest Practice Act that we think is important, and landowners have suggested that that's one of the key advantages to entering into a stewardship agreement. We're asking that that be reinstated. And finally, that the public records exemption, again, a concern expressed by landowners that their personal and private management plans not be subject to public disclosure, as was the case in the old stewardship agreement statute. Finally, we've had some concerns about one part of the draft bill. That has been the manner in which regulatory certainty at the state level was described. It appeared to grant a very broad exemption from changes in any rules, which was of concern to the conservation community. It also had a take-back provision, as I call it, that said we can grant this regulatory certainty to you, but we can take it back. And that was, of course, concern to landowners. With the help of this committee and Chair Avakian, the amendment that is before you satisfies our concerns and the concerns of our constituents or our partners in this effort in more clearly defining what was meant by the concept of regulatory certainty at the state level. With that, I will conclude my remarks and take any questions that you might have.
Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Quackenbush, I'm assuming there are no A1s out there. The A2s
are
what we've got. All right. Thank you very much. We'll close public hearing. House Bill 2114A.
A and open a work session on the same.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash A2 amendments into House Bill 2114A.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, for moving the dash A2 amendments into 2114A. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, for moving House Bill 2114A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Atkinson, if you will.
I'd love to.
And with that, close the work session on 2114A. Committee, we have just one more bill before us in total, not today. And that will be on, I was hoping we could finish up our hearings today for the session, but we've got the one more to do. That will be the Cougar Bear bill on Thursday, and that's all that we at this point have on the agenda. I don't anticipate that changing. And then we will be done for the session. And with that, we are adjourned. Oh, I meant to mention, too, there is